Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is October 22nd, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, I'm leaving Amsterdam tomorrow. I'm headed to Scotland for a week. We had a great lunch in Amsterdam last weekend. We had people from Netherlands, Switzerland, Germany, and America, lots of great subscribers. We had people in business and from the precious metals world, from media and energy. There were serious questions, discussion. I think we ended up staying there almost till 6 o'clock. It was very interesting. And then I headed out to the ocean for the weekend. We're having a Sunday brunch in Edinburgh. If you're in the area, check it out. You can find the details on the blog. When I leave Scotland, I'm headed for the Secret Space Program Conference outside of Austin, Texas, and I'll be there for the weekend, October 31st and November 1st. And if you can't join us there, you can always come in by stream. Check out their website. You can, if you go to events at Solari, you can get the Solari discount. Our theme tonight is Houston, We Have a Problem, and I want to talk about a serious problem. I'm usually not someone who sounds the alarm very often, but I'm going to sound the alarm tonight because there's a very serious story on the blog, and I want to bring your attention to it. The Garden is doing a series. It started much earlier, but I haven't picked up on it until recently, on a detention center in Chicago called Homan Square, and they describe a pattern of very significant abuse. It's almost as though this facility is being turned into the equivalent of a domestic equivalent of an interrogation of a rendition center. You're seeing torture, you're seeing sexual abuse, you're seeing people literally disappeared. One person has been documented dying. My guess is there's more. No way to tell. And my concern is, if you look at what's happening, I think it's a prototype. Part of the reason is Illinois is coming into serious changes as a result of financial and economic problems. This is a perfect place to do the kind of reengineering that's been going on in Detroit, including with changes in legal systems. The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, was head of political affairs at the White House from 1993 to 1998, when there was absolutely intentional, organized, systemic genocide going on in Washington and being engineered into the laws and rules. It's what I wrote the Dylan Reed book about, and it's what started my litigation with the federal government. They were literally dropping SWAT teams into neighborhoods, rounding up kids who just happened to be walking down the street, stuffing them into private prisons. We were organizing and operating slave labor camps outside the law. And we were doing it in a way that everybody thought they were going to make money on their prison stocks. It was almost as though America had gone mad. This is very serious. If you look at, I sent the story to one ally who came back and said, well, this is what happens if you have gun control. Interestingly enough, it is in an area where they've had significant gun control laws instituted. As I said, it's a place where financial reengineering is expected to happen, including in a big way. I think they're prototyping doing the kind of domestic rendition centers that are needed to implement totalitarian government. And the reality is, you might want to sit back and say, well, it's in a poor neighborhood. No. This is where the poor neighborhoods are where these things get prototyped, but then they get moved upscale. And I think this is very dangerous and very serious, especially if it gets combined with an effort to take over the local police. Because if you let the feds take over the local police, and then they start rolling out these kind of domestic rendition centers, you know, then you're talking about Nazi Germany and worse. So we need to stop this right now. And I would encourage you to take a look at the story. It's up in Geopolitics on Top Picks, but you can just do a search for The Guardian, because The Guardian has had quite a series and been able to document quite a lot. Now, Let's talk about some of the reasons to be worried about this. The first is we are literally destroying the rule of law in this country, and that is putting everybody's safety and property rights. If the economy has a problem, it's that lawlessness is very deflationary, and that is part of what you're seeing is a real loss of faith in the rule of law and in the leadership in this country, and that is having a very serious impact, not just on our lives in many different ways, but on the economy as well. Second of all, we're destroying our brand globally. I really have learned and felt it being here in Europe. You know, the world got clued into just how lawless we were with all the events after 9/11 and certainly with the global defaults and financial fraud and bailout. And that can absolutely destroy our standing in the markets with the currency. What we've been talking about a lot on the Solari report is the extent to which the Brits are clearly moving away from us and are regularly spanking us in the press and with a variety of different sort of political actions. The Guardian were the people who did Snowden. And as you know, I don't think that Snowden was just an innocent whistleblower. I think he had a lot of help. That doesn't mean he appreciates that or knows it, but I think there was a lot of help. And I think, you know, my suspicion is it's coming from the City of London. Now we have The Guardian doing the Chicago sort of police corruption story. It's the BBC that did the Warwicker trilogy, which was basically the equivalent of whacking international rendition. And we've seen a real pushback against the international rendition by the CIA. The Economist has been in the lead writing editorials against what we're doing in enforcement, against what we're doing in the war on terror, against what our aristocracy has become. And we're watching the City of London move, I think, you know, behind the scenes, but not always behind the scenes, to really build out their relationships with the Russians, the Chinese, and the BRIC nations. So I collected up some of the articles. I've been posting the different editorials from The Economist that have been spanking the Americans, but I wanted to read some of these to you because I want you to understand how serious this is. For The Economist to denigrate the Americans this way consistently again and again, it's sending a real message. And it doesn't seem to be a message we're hearing. I'm just going to read you some of the different quotes. So this was from the Economist on the aristocracy, the American aristocracy calcifying. When the candidates for the Republican presidential nomination line up on stage for their first debate in August, there may be three contenders whose fathers also ran for president. Whoever wins may face the wife of a former president next year. It is odd that a country founded on the principles of hostility to inherited status should be so tolerant of dynasties. Because America never had kings or lords, it sometimes seems less inclined to worry about the signs that its elite is calcifying. Losing the link between birth and success would make America richer. Far too much talent is currently wasted. It might also make the nation more cohesive. If Americans suspect that the game is rigged, they may be tempted to vote for demagogues of the right or left, especially if the grown-up alternative is another Clinton or yet another Bush. Okay, that was about a year ago, so let me keep going. Again, editorial from The Economist. In many ways, America remains a model for other countries. Its economic engine is roared back to life. Its values are ones which decent people should want to spread. Yet its criminal justice system, the backbone of any society, is deeply flawed. Changing it will be hard, but change is overdue. That was one of the nice ones. Okay, let's keep going. A reflexive dehumanization of criminals and felons discourages the exercise of real judgment in sentencing and probation. They're talking about the American criminal system. It allows us to sleep well when judges commit injustice in the name of justice, consigning people to captivity long after they ought to be let free. And it helps us rationalize the disenfranchisement of those who are eventually released. Now that Mr. Obama has made it a priority to point out the problems inherent in America's sentencing practices, perhaps Americans will begin to consider the possibility that the criminal justice system, in losing sight of proportionality, has become criminally unjust. Until then, America may make some headway in sentencing reform. Now catch this. But will struggle to really reduce its incarceration rate and rejoin the civilized world. The Economist is saying we're not a civilized country. The reality is, I agree. I don't think America is a civilized country. I think it uses secret police, secret torture, assassination, electronic and physical harassments. Its digital systems have no integrity, whether it's privacy invasion, hacking, and identity theft and computer fraud. And frankly, the world is seeing through the mirage. The reality is a problem. And the fact that the world sees it is another problem. So it's time to get radical and it's time to say no. The first thing we need to say no to is gun control. We also need to say no to Common Core. And I think it's time to take our kids out of school. And then after we take them out of school and there are no kids in the school, it's time to organize to re-engineer the taxes so that they go into a local escrow to pay for what we need under our control and not under federal control. In Illinois, when they start to tinker with the cash flows, I suggest everybody out and get into the numbers and start to do the place-based financial data thing and start to hold the system really accountable. After all, there are trillions of dollars missing that, in fact, if we were willing to reassert the law and hold accountability or hold people accountable, we could get some, if not all, of that money back. And as I said, the absence of civilization and the existence of lawlessness is the single greatest cause of deflation and the destruction of the economy. So unless we're prepared to address systemic inhumanity and turn this around, we are getting dangerously close to passing a tipping point. And we're watching the allies around the world who have supported us in the past pushing back at us. And that is a very dangerous situation. So we each have different lives. We each have different situations, but each one of us in our own way, in our own life, as we see fit, needs to push back hard against this inhumanity now, because it's, if it continues, we are all going to lose the goose that laid the golden egg. Money and markets. We're coming out of correction. And the market's sort of churning around and going sideways, but we're starting to see things move up and break through the lines. My expectation is we're going to see ourselves coming out of a correction in November and certainly by December. The S&P now down almost 2% for the year. The German DAX up 4.5% at this point. China large caps down almost 7% still. Developed markets flat for the year. That's developed away from North America. Emerging markets still down 10%. They're still struggling, and China's a piece of that. The bonds flat for the year. The long treasury now down 1.5%. Gold and silver, which had started to move up, are now gold's down 1.5% for the year, and silver down 0.5% for the year. Oil still in the basement, down 32%. The commodities index down 15%. U.S. dollar index has been struggling. We're now up 4.9% for the year. In anticipation of my presentation at the Secret Space Program Conference on space-based economy, I asked our former intern, wonderful attorney David Lichty, to write a special Solari report. It's up in the blog. You need to be logged in, but we'll let it go free this weekend, called Issues and Framework of United States Law Concerning Outer Space. Here's the reality. All economies gather, organize around the laws and regulations. It's very important to me to really understand the legal framework that's being laid out, particularly for private activities in space. Got a great question from a subscriber. Let me read it to you. Theranos is drawing big scrutiny. I suspect there's more to this story given the board populated by many Bohemian Grove types and headed by a bright, attractive, and media-hyped woman. On the next Larry Report, could I kindly ask you to share your thoughts? Yes, I put up a chronology up on, and that's one of the commentaries this week, to sort of go through. The Wall Street Journal had a very critical piece of the company, and let me just give you my bottom line. This is what I intend to do. I intend to avoid their testing centers. Absolutely. I intend to stay completely away from anybody who works at the company. I certainly, if they ever do an IPO, I certainly will not invest. I think this is a company you want to avoid and shun at every possible turn. Obviously, there's no way to tell. I'm just giving a guess from what I'm looking at, but let's look at the history. A Stanford University student starts the company in 2003. 2 years later, they hire a biochemist, Dr. Ian Gibson, who's a British biochemist. In the next 5 years, or actually 8 years, Gibbons, along with other company scientists, produced 23 patents. The Holmes, the Stanford University student who founded it, is listed as the co-inventor on 19. 2010, they announced they've raised another $45 million, bringing total funding to $70 million. One of the investors is the CEO of Oracle. At this point, you have George Shultz, former Secretary of State and chairman or head of the Hoover Institute at Stanford, on the board. On May 23rd, Dr. Gibson, that's May 23rd, 2013, so 8 years after the company's founded, or 8 years after he joins the company and 10 years after the company's founded, Dr. Gibbons, quote-unquote, commits suicide. According to his wife, he told her that, quote, nothing was working. Following that, shortly thereafter, three of the board members leave the board, all of them knowledgeable about the situation. One, a chemical engineering professor from Stanford who helped the Holmes start the company. You had a very experienced pharma and biotech executive, Robert Shapiro, formerly of Monsanto and G.D. Searle, leave, as well as the principal of ATA Ventures, one of the venture capitalists. Remaining on the board was the president of the company, George Shultz, and then added thereafter is the chairman of the Bechtel Group, the former Wells Fargo chairman, two former U.S. senators, Henry Kissinger, a former Secretary of Defense, and a retired general of the Marine Corps and a retired admiral of the Navy, as well as ultimately a few other people. And if you look at this pattern, it's very suspicious. And my real question is, did Dr. Gibbons really commit suicide, or is there a deeper story here? If you look at what's going on, it's all very fluffy about empowering people and empowering women. Whenever I see that kind of fluffy empowering the poor or empowering women, it often comes with a covert agenda. And my guess is that what you see, you know, if you listen to the CEO, she says this is all happening because they're reengineering the testing industry with cheaper tests. My attitude is these are not people you want to give your blood, your DNA, and related data to. So frankly, I don't want to speculate any further about what might really be going on, but this is a crew I would stay as far away from as possible. They're attributing a $9 billion valuation to the company. And my guess is, you know, whatever is going on, they're clearly planning on using technology to re-engineer how the testing industry works. And so there's very big money at stake. But if you look at who's on the board and some of the other things that may be going on, I think this is one where you definitely want to stay away. Speaking of health, there is a wonderful series being done by a guy I'm not familiar with named Ty Bollinger called The Truth About Cancer. He's releasing these as 9 videos, and each one is free for a very short period of time. I'm going to buy the series and watch the whole thing because there's no way I can watch it just in the 24 hours that he seems to release it. But I think it's very important because if you look at how many people's lives are touched by cancer and the quality of some of the interviews he's doing and the completeness of the series, I think it really could be a life-changing thing. And certainly what I've discovered is people who get cancer, if they've seen this kind of thing way ahead of time, they're prepared. If they haven't, they can very much go down the wrong road. So this is something that's worth picking up on. And if you look at the website, we've put up a couple of the videos so far. Politics. There's a certain popularity that's coming with the fact that Donald Trump is talking about 9/11, talking about Common Core, talking about vaccines. I'm of the belief that Trump is merely doing what he's told. His job is to white out the people who could really give Bush a run for the money. He's going to be happy to step aside when he's told to, when the time comes. I think, you know, his participation has been very successful for getting people re-engaged in the process and reaffirming the credibility of the process. My team was challenging me on how are they going to get rid of Trump, but where's the story that makes it look like it wasn't rigged if he steps down? And it was funny. I was thinking about all the different ways you could do it. And sure enough, today it says Dr. Ben Carson is now ahead of Trump in Iowa. I thought, oh, perfect. The black guy takes him out. The only way to me Trump has any chance of becoming a nominee is if Mr. Global decides they'd rather just rig it for Clinton early on, and then Trump could be a candidate. But I think it's very dangerous to start to fall into the trap of thinking this is a serious conversation about anything that's going to happen in terms of the machinery. I'll talk a little bit more about that during the wrap up. Biden has announced he's not going to be part of the process. And if you watch the announcement, huge smiles. My take on this is Joe Biden is now a very rich man. Or if he's not rich now, he will be when he leaves office. He made a deal, and he and his wife are very happy about that deal. And I'm sure the deal is all very legal, and it wouldn't surprise me if the money was in his offshore account tonight. Interestingly enough, Murdoch has disappeared from Twitter. He's been off of Twitter and quiet for about 11 days. He was one of the ones saying Biden would be the next president, so you wonder what's going on. The reality, my guess is that's what Trump wants as well. He wants a couple more real estate deals and a new TV show. Everybody wants to be rich. Nobody wants to be president. There's some great commentaries up on about my activities in the Netherlands, and I've really enjoyed it. It's a remarkable place. If you've never been to the Netherlands, it's worth checking out. The Dutch are remarkable people. It's got a remarkable history. Ask Catherine, one of the submissions, we're getting some great recommendations from you. Thank you all for them. One was about an ABC News reporter, Jamie Zimmerman, who died at 31. Thought it was very strange that we have another a person covering health, and so I was a little bit suspicious, and that's why I put it up. Dear Catherine, I'm a subscriber living in Ecuador with a vaccine-injured daughter, and then many questions about economics and how to invest your money. I don't give investment advice on the Salieri Report, but let me give you a couple ideas. Here's where I think there are very sound and reasonable places of investing your money. The first is anything you can do to lower your expenses permanently that's economic. Everybody's situation is different. But if you can own your own home, build capacity for your own food and energy, that's great. If you can build up your physical inventory, that's great. All these things that sort of re-engineer your balance sheet and protect you from expenses in the future are typically good investments if you do them well. I certainly think it makes sense to have money in cash and deposits at a good bank. Yes, you're not getting a yield, but I definitely think you know, as we've seen in Q3, cash can be king. So I think that's a very important kind of reserve to have. High quality stocks with good dividends. If I can buy a great company with a dividend of 5% or more, I don't really care if it goes up and down. You're getting 5%. Rental properties. Some people can do rental properties depending on where they are and what their skills and talents are. Others are in the wrong jurisdictions or it's not a good business for them. But particularly if you have a way to watch them, rental properties can be a great kind of investment in this environment. Again, as I said, cash flow matters, and anything that gives you a consistent cash flow from something that people really need. And finally, I do believe that precious metals make sense for a core position. I don't think they're a good investment right now, but I think they're essential core position for geopolitical risk. And if we do get another drop down, there'll be an opportunity to buy. If you haven't read my post up on the website on what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals, I recommend it to you. And we're not yet at the point, but if we get back to the point where you can get a good solid 10-year municipal that pays 5%, that's going to be a good thing to have. We've all gotten slaughtered by a drop in yields. You know, 20 years ago you could get 8% on the equivalent of a bank deposit, and now of course you get nothing. Dear Catherine, I believe I heard one of your talks, a discussion of a report that was once ordered by President Reagan where the federal taxes actually go, and that it had been found they were not funding the American infrastructure. I don't remember that. Then why people, including yourself, continue discussing taxes as if they're lawfully due and tax avoidance is a negative phenomena. I don't think of, I think a tax revolt properly done could be a very good thing. They point us to a take a look at a revocation of election on this website. I think the issue is if somebody doesn't pay their taxes, everybody else looks upon them as simply abrogating the contract and making it worse for everything else. I'm a great believer and have written pieces on, I think it would be wonderful if we could start to organize locally and do escrows, basically assert the citizen's right for the equivalent of forfeiture and demand that the federal government obey the laws related to the Constitution related to the management of the money. And if it doesn't, start to build escrows and engineer that money together into the kind of things that it's lawfully supposed to go to. So, for example, if we all have to take our kids out of school because of Common Core, then I think we need to go to the courts and build escrows of property taxes and get that money channeled to really getting our kids educated. So I think you need to deal with the taxes, not one by one, but in a fairly organized and systematic way. Yes, that makes it more difficult, but the reality is this country has commitments, it has contracts, and we want to honor those contracts, and we want to participate in honoring them, in my opinion. Dear Catherine, from what we've been hearing about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, doesn't this seem like a bill where corporations from all over the world are now coming together to have both nations and their people guarantee these companies' profits, business profits? I would say more to subsidize their cost of capital, guarantee their operating environment, and make it easier to aggregate a variety of cash flows into them. I wouldn't say guarantee their profits. But there's no doubt about it that we're organizing the economy around what, you know, aggregates things into large corporations as opposed to what optimizes economic performance. And that's part of the lawlessness that's hurting the economy. Dear Catherine, since you've been discussing the war between men and women that's been promoted for decades now within the media, I'm forwarding the following two videos. The first one shows Aaron Rousseau discussing how a powerful family told him they had funded women's liberation. Yeah, I've had that one up on the blog. And then the second one shows Gloria Steinem openly admitting in an interview that she was a CIA agent. I hadn't seen that one. That was fascinating. Let's go to the movies. I recommended this week Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is directed by one of my favorite directors, Ang Lee. And it's one of the world's most popular martial arts. I wanted to recommend it to you because our wrap-up, the big theme is the China stock market. And if you haven't spent any time in China, it's very helpful to remember that China is a country as big as the United States. It has many different areas, amazing diverse geography, many different subcultures and local ecosystems. It has spectacular beauty, you know, just like the United States when you go out into the plains. So it's a very big, diverse place. And if you look at the size, it's almost the same size as the United States. But of course, you've got 1.4 billion people, and we only have 325 million. So you have almost four times, imagine as many as four times as many people in the United States space. So the a lot of it was filmed in China, and you can really see the spectacular beauty and variation of the Chinese country. Anyway, tonight is our wrap up, and we're doing it in two segments as we always do. I'm going to be discussing the whole wrap up, but I'll focus on the Chinese stock market. And then I had a wonderful interview with Dr. Farrell, where we went through all the top stories and what happened in the third quarter. It's a fascinating discussion, and so that will run next week. Again, the whole point of this wrap-up is there's so much noise, and at this point, it's so overwhelming to try and sort through the news. Our goal with the wrap-up is if you only read and look at the web presentations or the book for the wrap-up, so if you only read four wrap-ups a year, our annual and three quarterly wrap-ups, you'll be unbelievably knowledgeable about what's going on. You really have a framework, and you'll see the world hold, and you'll be on top of the news with very little time. So if there's one thing you take advantage of in the Solari Report, I hope it's really the wrap-ups. And we have a great web presentation for you this time. One section on the Chinese equity markets, one section on the top stories of the quarter, and then finally the charts that we used in the equity review. So that's it for Money and Markets this week. As I said, next week we have the chewing through the wrap-up with Dr. Joseph Farrell. We talk about the big stories and what's on his mind with respect to the big stories. Fascinating discussion. Then the following week, a great interview with Jason Bawden-Smith, who has a new book on entrepreneurship. I love this book because it really helps a young person who's never been in business understand the real entrepreneurial process, not the one they tell you about in the magazines. And then November 12th, I'm very excited, Joe Klein-Sebahar has a new book on healthcare directives. This is a drum I keep beating on the Solari Report. Talk about inhumane situations. I think our healthcare system has really reached a tipping point. And I think it's unbelievably important before you or anybody in your family or anyone you love head into that system, they've got their healthcare authorities and powers worked out, and their people in place who've got the legal authority and the knowledge and the planning to make sure that you're fine and protected. So until next week, October 29th, with Dr. Joseph Farrell, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.